All right, we're back today to unpack four more of our listeners' common questions or challenges. First one is coaching in a blowout game. Secondly, working with parents who make strategic suggestions. Thirdly, how to coach kids through disappointment. And lastly, probably one of my favorite questions was climbing the coaching ladder as a transformational coach. I think when it comes to these questions, my answers have changed over the years, and I'm sure they will continue to evolve over time as well. But I am grateful, I'm very grateful to have helped dozens and dozens of coaches work through some of these challenges as well as experience some of them myself. So I hope you enjoy today's special episode. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin, the founder of TOC Culture Consulting, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. Each week, our podcast shares practical tools and methods to grow as a leader and build a better culture, and we usually do it in under 30 minutes. If you'd like to learn more about how we can help you outside of this podcast, head on over to tocculture.com. We've got free resources, including podcast notes, as well as an online course, and you can set up a call to learn more about our mentorship program.
All right, JP, here's another question that came from the community. And this one, I think there's two ways to look at as well. How do you coach in a blowout? And I think that could be from the perspective of, geez, you know, there's some nights where you're just outmanned. You know, you're going up against some Division I players. You rack your brain. You have no idea how to guard them, how to keep the score down. And you just expect that the game's probably going to get out of hand. And it could be on the other side where you show up and, you know, as a coach, there's not much you could do to lose the game. How do you coach in those situations when you expect or you know that there's going to be a blowout?
I'll tell you what, Nate, you put on some motivational music, you get them all pumped up with a few videos, and you give the best fiery speech you got. That's it. No, I think we kind of talked about this. I mean, in how to lose as a team. And that comes down to redefining what it means to win as a team, which is why I think, honestly, I think every coach should have some sort of success criteria or some sort of focus for every game that they judge themselves on their performance from a behavioral standpoint of, you know, things that are within their control. And even so, maybe some technical tactical things that are within their control. Do they run hard? You know, are they on the floor for loose balls? Are people bringing great energy on the bench? You know, are they calling, calling out screens early, some sort of communication? Get two to three things there that will drive your team's performance to help them be the best that they can be and stick to those things. So regardless if you're up 30, you're down 30, you're coaching to those things. You're getting them to reflect on those things and take ownership of those things that they can control. And I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things that you can do in those games to within the game to kind of keep the focus.
Yeah, I think for us, JP, we've approached it differently depending on which end of the spectrum we're on there. You know, we've gone into a game this year where we played, one of the top five teams in the state, and we're just not ready to compete at that level yet. And the approach was, and we shared this with parents in our weekly email and with our kids getting ready for the game, is this team is going to make us better. You know, we're not going to see a press in our practice that's going to be anything like what we see on Friday night. That's going to make us better, you know, and the way that we're going to have to guard, they're so good at what they do. It's going to force us to get better. We're going to learn a lot about ourselves, you know? And so for us being focused on that growth mindset of seeing every opponent in every game as an opportunity to grow, I think helps to frame it for our players a little bit. On the other side of that, ironically for us this year, we played that top five team. And then the next night we played maybe the worst team in our conference and won by 35 after losing by 35 the night before. Our approach was a little bit different because, again, you walk in and you're just like, there's just no way that this team can beat us. So what do we get out of it? Well, our approach was, here are three things that we can do, that we can practice and try to get better at tonight. Even if we're playing this weaker team, you know, we want to really run in transition. We want to really try to guard, you know, in a certain way. And again, it goes back to what you're saying about establishing the success criteria, but it was a little bit different in that, you know, we knew we could probably run just about anything and it would work against this team. So what's going to give us the biggest value? Maybe it's running our second offense. Maybe it's, you know, using a secondary defense, whatever it might be. But keeping kids focused on that, I think, was helpful for us, again, to draw out as much growth from the game, whether we're way ahead or way behind, as we could. JP, our next question has to do with parents. And we probably could have done a separate episode on issues with parents in a Q&A, but we pulled this one out of the hopper here because I think it's a little bit unique. And that is, what do you do with parents who are constantly making suggestions, particularly about tactics and strategies? You know, they ran a great press break when they were in seventh grade. Gosh, you should try, coach. Or why aren't you playing these two kids together? Or why are you putting this kid in this place when she should do this, that, or the other? I had a parent one time send me a scouting report on every player on our team, what they could do well, how we could put them in a better situation to be successful, and situations that we should keep them out of, because that's what they did when they were in fifth and sixth grade basketball. So how do you respond when parents, maybe they're motivated by good intentions and maybe not, but they want to make suggestions about how to coach your team?
This is a tough one because I think, you know, we obviously try to encourage coaches to work with parents, to be more collaborative. And at the end of the day, my suggestion is, if you can just ignore it and it doesn't bother you and you don't feel like it's affecting you or the player or the team in a negative way, just try to ignore those type of things if possible. A proactive approach that I think would be helpful that we actually talked about a little bit this summer was doing a parent meeting type presentation where you go through the X's and O's around why you do things that the way you do them. You know, and that could be tactically as well as, you know, your player development down to your culture, and just kind of pulling back the curtain and sharing those insights and the level of intentionality. I think in a lot of cases will blow parents away because they're still coming at the game from a very elementary perspective from when they coached the kids when they were growing up. And, you know, I think a lot of them might start to keep their suggestions to themselves. If you find it to be an issue, which I had a hockey coach this year that had an issue with this, the parent started to really affect the culture. It became a 2-hour phone call one night after a game around all the things they needed to do differently. Now you have to establish some boundaries. And I think that's critical. How you establish those boundaries, I think, varies by everyone's situation from, you know, really honestly, it comes down to your level of administrative support. You know, I've had administrators that will step up and they'll step in into those situations. And other times it has to come from you. But we need to establish boundaries around, okay, this is no longer kind of helpful or welcome feedback. You know, let's keep it to these things moving forward. But I would encourage coaches to do that more on a case-by-case basis rather than the blanket statement, I'll never talk about X's and O's or anything like that, because I think at the end of the day, you're going to get some of those parents and they're going to have all these thoughts or ideas. And they're going to be in their kids' ears saying, well, you know, coach should run this more. He should do this more, this. And that can just really start to affect the player and your team.
I think this one can be a little bit tricky for a couple of reasons. And, you know, when you talk about boundaries, particularly coming from my last job, you know, we were pretty clear in our opening parent meeting what we wanted from parents, our three asks. The kind of communication that we wanted, you know, if something's up with your kid, if something's going on at home that would affect how we can coach them, that's the kind of information that we are asking them to share. What we don't need are parents that ran flex when they were in seventh grade and went 8-0 and are telling me that that's the right offense that we should be running, or making suggestions about, you know, tactics and strategies. I just told them, look, I've been doing this for 20 years. We've had some success with some of the things that we're doing. We have reasons why we do everything, and I'm not necessarily opposed to sharing some of those reasons with you if you're really interested in it, but I don't need the parents to make suggestions. So I've got a great coaching staff for that. We'll engage with our players for that. That's their role. It's not your role. And I've had parents that have been pretty respectful of that. And I remember when I was at Springville, we played all zone my last 4 or 5 years there, and there was one dad in particular that he would just kind of rib me a little bit, you know, hey coach, you ever think about some man-to-man? Boy, those athletes would look in man-to-man, wouldn't they? Yeah, but he would say it with a wink. You know, it wasn't like, this is the key to going to the state tournament, you dummy, why don't you do this? But after his daughter graduated, he said, coach, can we sit down and just talk to me about zone? And so we did, we sat down for like 20 minutes and I said, John, here's why we played zone. And the reason was we don't have to scout very much and we get to spend more time on offense and skill development. And that's why we were so good offensively. And the takeaway was I never thought about it that way, you know? And so it was cool to kind of have that healthy conversation in the proper time and the proper way. And it was kind of fun to hear, you know, him talk about why he thought man-to-man would be so great with that group. And quite honestly, they were athletic and they could have done anything that we would have asked. So JP, our next question here is one, again, that a lot of coaches deal with when it comes to players being disappointed, disappointing in their role, disappointed in their minutes, disappointed in, you know, their starting status, whatever it might be. How do you coach kids through the disappointment that inherently is part of competitive sports?
Well, one thing that I want to kind of start this off with, I think that has come up so many times, is I see coaches, and I've done this myself, I've been so guilty, where I make decisions around, let's just say, playing time, because it's a big one. And I make decisions and I start to factor in how a player will handle the disappointment of them being dropped, say, from the starting lineup. And like, oh my gosh, if they're disappointed, is that going to shatter their confidence? And am I going to lose them for the whole year? And in the and I have a belief that I, as a coach, have a responsibility to do what is best for the team. And I need to make decisions on what is best for the team. And then it's for that player's responsibility to then learn and work to deal with that in a healthy manner. My role then becomes to support them. So let's just say an instance of I drop a player from the starting lineup because they're playing really poorly. They're really disappointed. It's my role to come in there and then try to help support them through that. I shouldn't change my decision and say, hey, you know what? You know, Johnny over here has been working really hard. He's proven himself, but I can't put him in the starting lineup because so-and-so just won't be able to handle it. It's going to crumble. That's not healthy. We're rescuing this kid from an experience that could be defining for them. And so what does that support look like, though? I think this is probably what coaches are saying. Okay, well, then how do I support players in a disappointment? You know, and I think I'll look at another situation that's come up recently where a senior, you know, is on the team and it becomes very clear to the head coach that they're not going to probably play this season. And it's going to be really, really difficult. And so the coach kind of goes to that player. And the big thing was he communicated and said, hey, this is going to be a hard conversation. You've given 4 years this program. And the reality is you're so far down the depth chart here. We don't see you getting any meaningful minutes at this stage of the season. We just don't see it happening. I know that's going to be really hard for you. It's going to be really disappointing. I personally believe that you have the ability to overcome this and to be a great teammate and help our team and practices and as a leader. Do you think you can do this? You know, and he just kind of challenged this individual. And for a couple of days, that player was really struggling, but they fought through that. They came to the coach. They said, hey, I got this, coach. And then, you know, the coach comes back and says, hey, well, how can I support you? What can I do in my role as a coach to help you through this? Because I know it's not going to be easy every day. Had a conversation around that. This coach also went to the parents because he just could anticipate that here's, you know, my son gets dropped, you know, is not going to be playing minutes as a senior. It's going to be a challenge and the parents are going to start to stew over it and it might explode in a couple of weeks. And just communicated right up front, hey, we've had this conversation with your son. We let him know what his role would be. And we know it's going to be difficult, but we want to support him through this, because we value him as a person and we value what he can still bring to the team. So all these were really proactive things to support them and to engage in that kind of very disappointing situation, but not to save them from it, to not go play them a few minutes here and there or put them in the game just so he didn't have to deal with it. And I think that's the big thing I would recommend to coaches is make your decisions on what is best for the team, but then support the individuals through that.
Yeah, and I think a couple things that go along with that, JP. One is trying to normalize struggle in advance. In other words, if you can create some perspective for your players or even for the parents that, you know, as John Carrier would say, we don't have enough resources to go around to make everybody happy. Somebody's going to be disappointed. There's not enough starting positions. There's not enough minutes. How do we want to handle that as a team? How do we want to handle that individually? What are things that cause players to feel disappointed during the season? And talking about those maybe in your summer camp, right? Before you even get into the year, so that We know this is part of competitive sports. There will be players that earn playing time at the expense of others. How do we want to handle it before it happens? And I think on the other side of that, JP, is just the ability to capture stories of players that have gone through it and being able to empower them to share that story to those players that are currently in that situation, whether that's, you know, writing a letter back to the team or capturing kind of their testimony in a video or just retelling their story. It normalizes this. This happens every year. And people have gone through it before you. They've come out on the other side. It's allowed them to grow as a person. It allowed them, you know, they found a way to be able to still enjoy their involvement on the team. And when you share that on the front end and you share that from players that have gone through it, I think it just helps to provide a perspective that this is part of the experience and I can get through this too. Now, our last question here, JP, addresses some of the conflict that can be associated with a transformational approach. Is it possible to climb the ladder in coaching while still being focused on using sport to impact people? How do you navigate transformational coaching with the desire to climb the coaching ladder?
I mean, I've got kind of three suggestions for coaches on this. The first, I'd ask you to reflect on the life that you want. Like, what is the life that you want in your family, you know, your spouse, your partner, you know, that you want for you guys and for your kids? Because as you climb the ladder, there's more pressure, there's more expectations, and oftentimes there's more demands on your time. And yeah, sometimes there's a little bit more money with it if you're lucky in some professions, but you really got to focus on the life that you want. I think that's a huge thing. And I remember Bob Stoops talking at the What Drives Winning conference, and he was reflecting on his experience of his dad as a high school football coach, who was an assistant football coach at the high school level. And he said, my dad would never want to become the head football coach at Oklahoma. And that would never have suited him because he wanted to spend Wednesday nights sitting at the kitchen table playing pinochle with my uncle, right? That was the life that he wanted. And Bob Stoops was able to embrace the life in Oklahoma and have a very fulfilling life for his family there, but it wouldn't have been the one for his father. And so I think you got to first start with the life that you want. Secondly, reflect on the person that you want to become. And wherever you go, no matter how high you climb this ladder, focus on who you're becoming, not just your players, but who you're becoming through this journey. And if you start to feel like the ladder, climbing the ladder is going to require you to sacrifice your values and your principles, then you'd probably tar on the wrong ladder. You know, you're probably aiming for an area that you just don't want to go. And it's not to say that you can't climb ladders and be at a high level for this profession of coaching without sacrificing your values. Just for some of us on our journey, it may create pressures and demands that cause us to sacrifice those values. I don't know if that makes sense, but that would be another encouragement, is for coaches to really be aware of that. Who do they want to become on this coaching journey?
What you're describing there, again, reminds me of my favorite college football coach, Matt Campbell, whose name was rumored for just about every head coaching job in Division I football over the last month or so. And so far, Coach Campbell has decided to stay at Iowa State. And he made a comment in a news conference here not too long ago when somebody asked him about the coaching carousel. And he said, the people that know me best know my values. They know that my family comes first, that the people that I work with and the relationships that I have in that building are second, and the impact that we can have on the life of our athletes is third. That's what I value in my decision-making process. And I thought, as a transformational coach, you know, everything that we do should start with our purpose. And Matt Campbell's got that figured out. His purpose is his family, the relationships with the people that he works with, and the impact that he can have on his student athletes. And then he makes career decisions from there. And I think finding that clarity is the challenge, right? And then holding to that, being disciplined to that in our decision-making, it becomes a challenge as well. But as we've talked about many times, it's doing the work to figure that out provides a lot of clarity when it comes to making decisions about our future.
Yeah, and there's an episode 149 with Greg Tonegal out of Indiana Wesleyan. He talks about why he has stayed at that level and hasn't made the jumped at the opportunities that he's had, you know, as a national championship coach to go to the Division I level. And the reality is it comes down to his purpose, his mission. And that is he wants a deep level of influence on the life of his players. He's not looking for influence across, you know, to be some big time, you know, keynote speaker as a head coach, you know, on the run of the circuit. Like, he just wants really deep quality relationships with the coaches and players in his programs. And that still has had a profound impact on me, that stuck with me. And I always try to share that with coaches as they look to climb the ladder. You know, are you sacrificing the level of and depth of relationships? And I've worked with some coaches at even like the Division I level who said they, you know, one coach in particular shared that he never wants to move to a Power Five conference because he just feels like if he moves to one of the big conferences as a coach, he's never going to have the life that he wants or the level of influence that he has on his players because it becomes so corporate and commercial at that level. And I can really appreciate and respect that.
Again, I think we could probably do a full episode on, you know, making the decision about job opportunities and climbing the ladder and is the grass greener on the other side, you know, at different opportunities as you progress in coaching. But again, I look back at Matt Campbell's criteria here. And the question I would ask myself is, you know, if I'm continue to climb the ladder, what effect will that have on my family? You know, as you said, and if my family life changes to this degree, am I still going to be happy, even if I'm making more money or coaching in the big time? You know, same thing. TJ Rosin talks about this all the time. You know, he's chosen to stay at Emmanuel College for 20 years and has had lots of opportunities to leave. And it comes back to, I love the people that I work with. You never know, you know, necessarily what those relationships will be like when you move on. And so if you have a place where you're coaching with people that you love and you love to show up with every day, I don't know that that can be overvalued, you know, in terms of just where we're at. And then the last thing, you hit it on the head right there with referring to Greg Tonegal, is can I have a greater influence? And it may be possible to have a greater influence on a bigger stage or with more players or with more scholarships or whatever it might be. But really understanding how you impact athletes, I think, can help to provide some guidance there as well.
So I know I said this in the beginning, but I am incredibly fortunate to support coaches in the way that I am. I am able to learn through dozens of coaches' seasons and experiences in just 1 year, and I've had five of them. It's been probably the most significant thing about my growth these last 5 years, even more so than the book a week that I typically read. So a huge thank you goes out to all the coaches in the TOC mentorship program and community for giving Nate, Shane, and myself the opportunity to support them, to learn from them and their experiences, and then often just share their stories and experiences here on this podcast. You might want to join the TOC mentorship program and community in the coming year. Now, Nate and I's availability fluctuates based upon the time of year, but we are also expanding our mentorship team in the coming year. Coaches that I've supported for over 3 years who understand culture, understand leadership, and know what this mentorship experience entails, they're going to be supporting other coaches as well. The mentorship program includes one-on-one calls, personalized call notes, and a culture plan, a sounding board, you know, kind of 24 hours, 7 days a week at times. It feels like you also get a discount at our yearly retreat, and the option to bring one of us in for some on-site consulting. It also includes membership in our community, which our community gets free access to online courses, other online documents and resources that we have for coaches, just so many different types of resources we've got out there, as well as community Zoom roundtable discussions. Whether you can make it on those calls or not, you always get the video recordings. We run monthly book studies, as well as we have a weekly Bible study and a community group chat where coaches are just kind of leaning on each other, asking each other questions, sharing their experiences. So we've got a link in the details of this episode to join our waiting list or to schedule a call with Nate or myself. We hope to hear from you. If we don't, it's not a big deal. We hope you continue to listen to the podcast. Maybe that's all you need. And if that's it, that's great. We just want to help you in whatever way you need. Thank you for being a listener, and sorry if this sounded like a big advertisement, but I hope as you head into 2022, you feel confident and encouraged and enthusiastic to go out there and to be the leader that I know people need you to be.